Cause I need you like the flowers need the rain.
On the go? Take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron.
Welcome back. This is Ottawa Now. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Christy Cameron. President Joe Biden to arrive in Ottawa tonight, a whirlwind 24-hour visit to the nation's capital for the U.S. president. And during the visit, he and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau expected to talk about a number of things: Buy American policies south of the border, defense spending, the situation in Haiti, among them. Now, joining us to chat about that is Bruce Hayman, the former U.S. ambassador to Canada and co-author of the best-selling memoir, The Art of Diplomacy, Strengthening the Canada-U.S. Relationship in Times of Uncertainty. Bruce, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, pleasure. Good to be here in Ottawa.
And thanks so much for coming back. We really appreciate it. On this idea of U.S. President Joe Biden's first visit, are you surprised, I guess, somewhat? It has been, you know, a wild 3 years for everybody globally because of the pandemic. Are you surprised it's taken this long for Biden to get up here north of the border?
No, because his first visit was virtual. It was during COVID. So I think the Canadians and all of our friends up here need to understand the first phone call when he was elected, the first phone call when he was sworn in, the first bilateral visit, all with Prime Minister Trudeau. And in my conversations leading up to his swearing in and all of the work being done, I think they completely understood the importance of the Canada-U.S. relationship. We have a strong ambassador here, and it takes some time to pull off a meeting like this, and a lot of details, a lot of scheduling. This isn't in the normal fit of a, you know, North American leader summit or a G7 meeting or a G20 meeting or all of these multilateral meetings. So, you know, this is the right time. There's a lot of things that we can work on together, and I think we will over the next 2 days.
Wait, and just because you mentioned, you know, the G7 meeting, the former U.S. President Donald Trump, that was, I believe, his only visit to Canada, was for the G7 meeting, I believe. How much of this, we did see a lot of acrimony between the two administrations, the Trump administration and the Trudeau administration, for lack of a better word. How much of this is about kind of smoothing things over in terms of that partnership as well? You know, you did mention Biden made his first phone call to Trudeau after being elected on that front, but how much about this is also kind of smoothing that relationship over, a rather contentious one on many fronts?
I completely agree with you, and it is the role that the president has taken on, recognizing the fact that many of our allies, Canada in particular, you know, have been, you know, maybe disadvantaged, mistreated, disrespected by then President Trump. And so it was a very, very difficult period of time for many of us in the United States, but for Canadians and many of our allies around the world. The president has to do that work, but simultaneously we have to move ahead as well.
How important do you think has this relationship kind of come under the microscope between our two countries? You know, we have seen Russia staking some claims to the Arctic. We've seen, you know, NORAD come into action with these Chinese spy balloons as well. You know, how big, I guess, is the defense portion of this? We're hearing that Canada is going to be pushed for some more spending on that front. But has that shown to you the kind of importance between the relationship between these two countries?
How amazing is it that we're with the same week that just earlier in the week, we had President Xi visiting with President Putin. And later in the week, we have President Biden visiting with Prime Minister Trudeau. The juxtaposition of and the extremes is just stark. Authoritarian regimes versus democracy. I think that much of the conversation will land on, in some ways, aspects of what's happening with Russia, Ukraine, what's happening with China, its role in the world, and the influence it's had. I know the issues that you've been facing over the last few weeks with regard to China and the election. In the U.S. today, there are hearings taking place about TikTok in China. We've had these balloons. It's just, you know, it's an ongoing story, but it's escalating a bit. And I'm confident there will be very serious conversations around that.
And President Biden expected to speak tomorrow as well. Do you expect him to address some of those issues that you just mentioned too?
I think, you know, and I am not privy to the comments that he's making, but I would say, you know, having sat in Parliament and listened to President Obama speak very clearly about the importance of Canada in the world, but also the role that Canada needs to play going forward. We live in, you know, more dangerous times, I think, especially with what's going on in Ukraine and Russia in particular, but even more broadly. And so with all of that, the role of Canada in the world is an important one. I think the president is going to address that, as well as obviously affirming the importance of the bilateral relationship and how much the United States values its relationship with Canada and appreciates it.
You just, you bring up Russia and China as well. You know, we talk about the issues that we're facing right now, Ukraine among them, a number of other issues when it comes to some aggressiveness from both countries as well. But we also talk about not just the need for military intervention, but, you know, diplomacy as well. How difficult is it to be diplomatic with, you know, countries such as China and Russia, who are obviously, you know, out to get you in some aspects? But, you know, how difficult is it to kind of level out that level of diplomacy with a level of action that also needs to be backed up, I guess?
It's difficult, but necessary, really important. You know, at some point, we're going to end this war with, you know, with Ukraine. And I'm confident Ukraine will be a standalone, strong and thriving democracy at the back end of this. But the path ahead is going to be bumpy, and it will not just be military that will resolve it. It'll have to be diplomacy. And then the issues that we face with China, geopolitically, the pressures, South China Sea, Taiwan, you know, the various things to do with technologies and interference, balloons, everything. You know, these can't be resolved, you know, with force. It has to be resolved diplomatically, and you have to be able to work across the table. It's critical.
And when we talk about, you know, global threats, is that the existential threat you kind of see when we look around the world, is, you know, China and Russia and what they're up to, I guess?
I think that's one. A larger threat that I see more developing around the world is the threat to democracy overall. We saw it and felt it in the United States. You know, we're still seeing the ramifications of the Trump administration, his January 6th. He's under potential, you know, indictment in not just one, two, three, four, five different areas, and maybe more. And, you know, it was all about the process of power and stealing votes and controlling. And so we see that around the world more and more. And so unless we protect democracy and enhance it and not take it for granted, we're likely to see it continue to be threatened and could lose it in a number of places. And I think that's the greatest threat right now.
Something to definitely ponder. Bruce, we'll leave it there, but thank you so much for your time today and your perspective on this visit. I really appreciate it.
Look, it's a time of celebration. I know we talked about a lot of serious things, but importantly, the United States values this relationship very deeply with Canada. And so I'll just say thank you as a former ambassador, and I'm sure others will say thank you in the next few days.
And thank you, Bruce. I appreciate that. We've been doing all this late night talking about anything
you want to till the morning. Now you're in my life. Listen anytime, anywhere through your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Now, Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron continues on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Artur Wilczynski, former Director General of Security and Intelligence at Global Affairs Canada, also served as Assistant Deputy Minister of Intelligence at the CSE, the Communication Security Establishment. He's going to join us to chat about this whole issue surrounding Liberal MP Han Dong, now Independent MP Han Dong, facing some serious allegations in terms of what's being reported by Global News, not been verified by us, but in terms of CTV and Bell Media as well. But Dong still announcing to the House of Commons that he was going to step down last night. But professing his innocence as well. So he's going to sit as an independent, he says. He told reporters some media outlets have reported unverified and anonymous sources that have attacked his reputation and called into question his loyalty in Canada. So this whole situation, this is just the latest chapter on this. We'll talk about that with Artur coming up at the bottom of the hour as well. Former leader of the NDP says The allegations that Dong is facing show the need for a national public inquiry. There's been much pressure for the Trudeau government to call a public inquiry into alleged foreign interference in our elections. Tom O'Kerr telling CTV News a lot of this has to do with the fundamentals of our institutions.
One of the fundamental principles of our justice system is you're innocent, and so it's up to others to prove your guilt. And he's not even accused of anything. It's just an allegation with regard to his behavior reported and the Chinese government. So this is why I think that Pierre Poilievre is on solid ground more than ever calling for an independent inquiry into this whole mess, because here you have an individual in very moving terms standing up in the House of Commons saying, look, I was elected. I'm a Canadian. I was elected by Canadians. And this is untrue.
Well, Kerr saying at the end of the day, David Johnston, who has been appointed as special rapporteur on this issue, has no authority on whether or not an independent inquiry happens. He says he can make recommendations, but the decision comes down to the Prime Minister.
The Prime Minister, he heads the cabinet table, and it's a cabinet decision to strike a commission of inquiry. So all this really gives the appearance that Trudeau is trying to stall. The appearance also is not favorable here because he did step down. And if we look at what's happened over the past several weeks with these allegations and this information that has come out in dribs and drabs, it's regularly confirmed. So I have yet to see a single element of this type that's come out that has been proven to be false.
There has been evidence of Chinese interference in a number of different political arenas, you know, municipal politics with consulate generals in Vancouver as well as Toronto. So we'll talk about that with Archer as well coming up at the bottom of the hour. We talked about the Ottawa Senators yesterday, the possibility of any public money going into a possible new arena at LeBreton Flats. A lot of reaction to that yesterday. It was because Mayor Mark Sutcliffe was asked about it, not taking it off the table. But also not jumping at the idea either. When asked about this yesterday, of course, ahead of his meeting with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman next week, sale of the Sens heating up right now. Could just be a matter of weeks before we know who the new suitor is. But he was on TSN 1200 today as well. Also mentioned that he didn't think that the new arena necessarily has to be at LeBreton Flats. Here's what he had to say.
Not necessarily, but I think, you know, I think ideally it would be. It all depends on where it would be built and what the deal would be and what would be around it. But in principle, I think we've seen throughout North America that downtown arenas are better than suburban arenas typically. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't rule out the possibility that whoever the new owners are might decide they want to stay in Kanata and refurbish that arena and stay where they are. That's obviously a possibility. I wouldn't rule out, you know, the deal being struck with the NCC for LeBreton Flats, and I wouldn't rule out looking at another location as well. I think all options are on the table, and it's really about what's best for the community and what's best for the team.
Very interesting. But, you know, I guess back to the original point is that it is up to the owners on that front. So I don't know if this is just some posturing in terms of, you know, there are other options on the table. But he was also asked about the possible use of public money on that as well, an issue we talked about. It was our question of the day yesterday.
Well, I'm not a fan of public money going into an arena. I wouldn't be supportive of that in principle. I'm not ruling anything out at this point because we don't know what the scenario will be and what the opportunity might be. I suppose there are always options where, for example, if they're building a facility and it's got more than one rink surface in it and the city could use one of those and it would replace an existing aging facility somewhere, you know, and it's infrastructure that the community could use, I wouldn't rule out a scenario where there are some city dollars going into it. But I want to be clear, by saying I'm not ruling it out, it doesn't mean I'm in favor of it. It doesn't mean I support the idea of the city writing a big check. I think that's very, very, very unlikely that the city will write a big check to support this. We have a very, very tight budget, and we have a lot of other priorities, including building more affordable housing and building more transit. There are other ways that the city can be involved in this without stroking a big check. And I don't think that's, you know, I don't think there's a lot of public appetite for taxpayers' dollars to go into an arena. So I don't see that happening. But again, I don't want to rule anything out because there's no deal on the table. We don't know who the new owners are. We don't even know where they're going to build an arena, if they're going to build an arena.
Ottawa Mayor Mark Sutcliffe on TSN 1200 today. Your thoughts welcome. 580-580. Tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. Back to talk about Chinese interference in our elections after the break. This is News Talk 580 CFRA.
It's our way you face the truth. You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron. on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
To my family, and in particular, my parents, who brought us here to Canada. To my wife, Sophie, and my kids, I love you. I thank you for all the support and love you gave me. The truth will protect us.
Liberal backbencher Han Dong, speaking in the House of Commons last night, announcing he was stepping down from the Liberal caucus after a Global News report said that the Toronto area MP willingly received electoral support through Chinese officials. And when asked about Dong's resignation at a press conference today in Beijing, China offering no comment. When asked about these allegations, said the Canadian side may be in a better position to comment, noting that China opposes interference in other countries' internal affairs. So that's what's coming out of Beijing today. But joining us to talk about what seems to be the latest chapter in this national security story is Archer Wilczynski, former Director General of Security and Intelligence at Global Affairs Canada, also serving as Assistant Deputy Minister of Intelligence at the Communications Security Establishment. Archer, thanks so much for your perspective on this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Just your thoughts on this latest, just not to get too much into the weeds of the allegations here, but this one obviously hitting home last night, the idea that, you know, a sitting Liberal MP was allegedly having some kind of contact with the Chinese foreign ministry outside of the normal chain of communications.
So a few thoughts on that. Again, I always feel compelled when I speak to folks is to reiterate that, you know, I completely agree that the foreign interference by the People's Republic of China is a profound national security problem, and that we need to do more in order to manage the risks associated with it. And I do agree with those who have called for an inquiry. However, I think that the way that this thing is being handled and the way that these disclosures are making their way into the public domain are profoundly troubling to me. Here are leaks, and I did air quotes here, but purportedly done by members of the national security and intelligence community, folks who are Government of Canada officials, putting allegations out into the public domain in a way that are not corroborated by evidence, in a way that is not part of due process, or in a way where an individual or a community can effectively defend themselves. And they have had a profound effect on an individual and on communities. And I think that Canadians should be very troubled that government officials are doing that. It's very different for journalists to have a source in the community or elsewhere than to have a source inside government who is acting outside their legal authorities.
And furthermore, I guess to your point in context is, you know, we did see in the Globe and Mail last week, you know, an anonymous op-ed from those who have been leaking essentially to the press saying that they're doing this for national security reasons on that aspect. The way that you're describing that this has been kind of playing out in a drip by drip fashion, do you think this is, you know, somewhat politically motivated? Is there that aspect here?
Well, look, you know, it's really difficult to get into the heads of individuals who are undertaking these kinds of unlawful disclosures. And, you know, even if their motives, as was written by the author of that anonymous op-ed in the Globe and Mail, even if their motivations are altruistic, I think that the effect of what they have done is profoundly damaging. It's damaging in terms of the trust that Canadians have in their national security institutions. It's damaging in terms of the actual techniques and sources that intelligence relies on to provide information to national security in order to manage these kinds of threats. But for me, the biggest issue is around the fact that there has been a violation of some fundamental human rights of individuals that have been named in those disclosures. To go back to that point, people have the right to due process. They have the right to the presumption of innocence. But as you know, you played, you know, Mr. Don's clip at the top of the segment. This is having a profound effect on an individual around those disclosures. There is already a presumption out there by many that because these are quote-unquote national security sources, that they are correct. And again, given Canada's history in this space and how illegal disclosures in the past have also caused harm, that has resulted in a legal framework and a policy kind of framework where we have to behave in a way that respects the law. If those individuals and organizations that are meant to protect our national security cannot do the very basics of following the law themselves, I think that that in and of itself undermines democracy, and that's dangerous, in my opinion.
And I think people can definitely understand that, particularly, you know, with the clip. It's a very broken Han Dong speaking last night and stepping down. Again, none of these allegations have been proven. I should throw that again. It sounds like you're saying, though, Archer, you know, we need to step back and say, what are we accomplishing here with some of these leaks? What exactly are we doing, and are we harming people and the public more than what we're helping?
I think we are harming, and I think that the only people who are very happy today are the adversaries of democracy that are in, the Chinese Communist Party, are in Putin's regime in Moscow, and in the theocratic regime in Tehran. These are the enemies of democracy who want people in countries like Canada to feel that their systems are not reflective of them, that their systems are corrupt. And, while there is this threat, while there is a challenge around how they are interfering in our democratic processes, we need to make sure that we approach these threats through the rule of law, not vigilantism, not sort of the kind of I know best, you know, damn the speed of government. I'm going to decide how this is going to be dealt with. And in my opinion, the best way to do that is to leak intelligence to the media in dribs and drabs in a way that again, erodes Canadians' confidence in our democratic institutions. I think that where we at today shows that we, in fact, do need that inquiry, because I am really worried that as this continues, more revelations or accusations coming from unnamed security sources are going to make their way into the public domain, and it's going to continue to erode that confidence. So we need a process where we can effectively handle the classified aspects of it and understand better what took place in 2019 and 2021. But more importantly, we need a process where we can, as its objective, restore confidence in our democratic institutions, understand and explain the threat to Canadians as transparently as possible, and we can and must do a better job than we're currently doing. I actually think part of the problem that we're facing today is a history of national security and intelligence in Canada not being as transparent as they could be because of a risk aversion. But we also need to have this inquiry look forward into making sure that whether it's political parties, officers from Elections Canada, our National Security and Intelligence Committee, whether they have the right tools and authorities to effectively ensure a resilient democratic process in Canada and restore confidence for Canadians so that when they go to the polls, they know that their will is being reflected in the results and the government that represents them.
And just that further general point of democracy, you know, I think we saw the risk at the start of the 21st century of, you know, kind of politicizing intelligence, or we've seen kind of that when it comes to, you know, the U.S. and the invasion of Iraq, for example. Is what's the risk of continuing to politicize some kind of intelligence here for, you know, simple political gain? Is that, you know, eroding democracy, in your opinion?
So, I think that there's actually, not to get too academic, but there has been some important studies around the politicization of intelligence that in Canada done by some really, good Canadian academics that shows that that has not happened in the Canadian context. So there's, in terms of like the comparing the analogy of, for example, the bad intelligence from, that led to the invasion of Iraq, that's very different from what we're seeing today. I think that what we're seeing today are illicit disclosures, where individuals are making choices about putting information out into the public domain that is affecting the public knowledge and public perceptions around a specific issue. That's different from an analysis that might have been jigged in a certain way to encourage a policy outcome. That's very different. But I think that both are harmful. And I think this is why we have a robust regime, a legal regime that tells intelligence agencies and organizations involved in national security how they are supposed to work. It gives them the authorities. It puts constraints on them and then ensure that we have a compliance regime to ensure that the folks who work in security and intelligence are following the rule of law. And I think that what the, you know, what these disclosures show is that we have to maybe take another look at some of these measures to ensure that we have the tools necessary to constrain behavior of individuals within the intelligence community who might not be behaving in accordance with the law and in accordance with the obligations that they took when they started working for that community.
And thank you for those distinctions and your analysis, Arthur. Very fascinating stuff. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Arthur Wilczynski joining us to chat about this whole issue of China interfering in our elections. He's a former Director General of Security and Intelligence at Global Affairs Canada.
I'll have a confession to make too.
Really?
Listen. Tell All Thursday on News Talk 580 CFRA.
And a fitting topic for Tell All Thursday, as we are joined in studio by CTV's Matt Scooby. Matt?
Andy?
You got the moves. That's the best dancing I've ever seen on radio.
No, that's sad then. That's
wow. Sad. Yeah, so. It's way better than mine though.
Saying something.
Okay, so story out here. I saw this last night. More than half of Canadians okay with telling lies to spare others' feelings. So this is what we call white lies, essentially. Is this something that, how do we feel about white lies? Is it still a lie nonetheless?
Yeah, but I think if it's a white lie and I think if it's non-consequential and you're sparing someone's feelings, especially if it's a spouse, a partner, kid, you know, kids, I think is another thing too that I have, you know, some unique experience with lately at different points, then I think it's acceptable. I don't like big lies or outright lying, clearly, but I think white lies every now and then, especially if it's at the expense of someone else's feelings or and is not going to necessarily come back or is not totally untruthful, that you know, that's going to come back either to bite you or is going to come back and be like something serious, more serious. Now, again, I say that, but then that usually happens, not usually, but doesn't that happen sometimes where it's like you think it's a white lie and then all of a sudden it snowballs?
Maybe it's not.
And then ends
you
up in a,
of a specific story. I
in
don't
a much bigger deal. Yeah. I think that my lies when I have to tell lies, and I am a brutally honest person, right? Like that's just me. Like if you have something in your teeth,
you said
and I don't
know, the lie detector test determined that was a lie.
there it is.
Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, and thank you, Maury. Yeah. So I think, like, you know, if I don't know you, you have something in your teeth or you have something on your face, I'm still going to tell you.
I think that's polite.
Like I'm just going to tell you because I just don't think it's rude or anything else. But like I will normally tell you how it is a lot of the times, no matter what. Like, again, there's varying degrees of that.
I guess that could be perceived as rude. But
right, exactly.
I could think it's perceived as polite, too.
But that's just the way that I am, and that's just the way it's going to happen. The lies, and I don't like to tell lies, again, because being brutally honest, but like the lies that I will tell or not tell are the ones by omission. Like,
correct. We'll just bring it up?
Try to leave things out when it is not necessary to be bringing it up.
But I think the main point, and you put it well in a sense of there's no real consequence in a sense of, you know, nothing happens as a result of this, right? Does this look good on me? Maybe it doesn't look that great, but yes, because, you know, I'm going to spare you your feelings and it looks great and you feel good. So that's all that matters, right?
So let me tell you,
who's hurt by that?
My white lies, and maybe it's kind of like, you know, when... This is bad, and I think my wife knows sometimes, like there will be points where, you know, like we have a calendar in our house or there's events and different things because, you know, we're starting to be a little bit busier, but we always had calendar in my house growing up, and like if I put things on the calendar or I forget to at different points, like there will be some times where I'll be like, I'll forget to tell my wife that I have something or something has come up. And I'll be like, sometimes be like, I told you that, like a few weeks ago. And like, I totally, like, that's totally lying. That's a totally white lie. Where I can't do it often because the guilt just kills me and eats me up.
Kidding.
Like, I can't do it because almost all the time I just wear stuff where it's like, kind of like, well, she's like, well, you didn't tell me that. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I didn't. I'm sorry. And like, that was totally my fault. But there are other times where it's like, I don't want to deal with this right now. I told you this 3 weeks ago. And she'll be like, you know, especially with kids. You know, parent brain, it's just kind of like, you know, like I forgot kind of stuff. And I've gotten away with it, I think, a couple of times. If you're listening and know my wife, do not text her and do not message her right now.
This is in confidence.
Yeah. Even though she might be in the car listening, we'll see. But so like it happens rarely because again, I don't like to lie. The guilt just kind of, different points.
Totally. I think that's just, live TV being quick on your feet, I think, right?
Oh, sometimes.
It's kind of interesting too, because they do break it down by region. So Atlantic Canada, the largest percentage of them think that it's okay to tell white lies, 65%. And Ontario and Quebec are the lower end, 53 and 51%. So,
Atlantic Canadians. 65 of Atlantic Canadians?
Yeah.
Maritimers think that it's okay to lie?
65% say that it's okay to tell white lies.
I feel like that's because that they are always looking out for other people.
The polite aspect? That's what I was thinking.
You won't meet, there's great people across this country, including here in the city. You will not meet better people than you do on the East Coast. Like, literally, when you stand at the side of the road, maybe not necessarily in Halifax or in Dartmouth in the big city, but in Antigonish, the town that I went to school in, if you stood at the side of the road and there wasn't a sidewalk crossing, cars would stop both directions to let you cross the road.
Yeah.
Seriously. But that's how they are. That's who they are. So that surprises me a little bit.
Weirdly enough, when I was living in Halifax, the exact same thing, even on city streets, is that they would say, it's like, no, you don't need to stop.
No, but they'll stop but and they let do. You cross yeah, because 100%. That's who they are. So maybe they're just sparing people's feelings.
I think that's what it is. It's got to be. Makes sense. Thank you, Scooby. Are white lies okay? Text us 580-580. Tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. The 4 o'clock news coming your way. Here on News Talk 580, CFRA.